Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you for joining us on Giving Black Radio, a program focused on philanthropy in Black communities. My name is Bethia Carter, and I'm your host this afternoon. We are drawing to a close on our second annual celebration of 100 Days of Giving Black. And we're growing, I would say, even a bit nostalgic about all the people that we have interviewed. We've had some amazing interviews focusing on philanthropy in our communities, and we have learned so much. This weekly radio internet show has interviewed Black leaders discussing not only their perspective on the philanthropic journeys of today, but even tomorrow. And also, we are so thankful to you, our listeners, and we invite you to call in on our show today for questions for our guests at 1240. Today, speaking of our guests, we are very honored to have two special guests with us today. Mrs. Dixon, who will share with us her philosophy and thoughts around philanthropic giving, not just of dollars, but of time, talent, and treasures. Our today's topic will be really, how are we serving as a link to the past? And as a link, or for play on the words, because I believe she's a link as well, between the past and the future, and she truly is a model of Black philanthropy that we aspire to become. Mrs. Dixon is one of those heroes of philanthropy that really embodies what it means to give back and be a concerned citizen. She represents the type of philanthropic legacy of African Americans that is too often ignored or overlooked because she goes about her philanthropy in a very understated but highly impactful way. Anyone that lives in Greensboro, North Carolina, and has had the privilege of sitting with her, knows of her three passions. One, a commitment to promote education, a concern for the homelessness, too, and an international program that she began in 1996 through the Lynx. Also, of her love of her alma mater, Bennett College, which epitomizes the power of Black philanthropy's duty as well as impact to change lives. She gave her alma mater a significant gift, and it served as the intergenerational center, that a new home for the college's preschool program, a learning lab for students, and a volunteer opportunity for older adults. Again, that whole link between the past and the present. The building has a new name, the Martin Dixon Intergenerational Center, to honor her philanthropic commitment. Mrs. Dixon, we're so happy to have you. How are you this afternoon?
I am getting along fine. Thank you for asking.
Great. And we also have another guest that I'd like to welcome back, Ethan Lindsay, of Greensboro, North Carolina Foundation, my partner in crime, so to speak, whom we featured earlier this year. Mr. Lindsay, joining us from the Community Foundation of Greater Greensboro. He's the new development officer, and also I think he is now doing work that is much larger, is recently promoted, to oversee gifts and really understanding the impact of catalyzing community gifts from primarily people of color. So thank you for joining us, Ethan. Thank you.
Glad to be here.
Great. You know, Ethan, the last time we left off, one of the things that we were talking about were philanthropic drivers that are shaping our communities. Wow. And how does the generational trends that you're seeing, how do they have an impact? Can you share that with us as we then deal go a little bit deeper to talk about Mrs. Dixon's view?
Yeah, Bethia, I a few weeks ago, I probably would have answered this question a lot differently and probably just really be honest, given the typical answer in terms of influences that we so often hear about that drives our philanthropy. One, probably from the church, a need for social responsibility. But since talking with you and actually really looking into some of the research that you've spearheaded, I'm going to go out on a limb and say that I don't think particularly the field of philanthropy, is really just beginning to learn what is driving philanthropy and Black communities. Don't let me be cute or obtuse about it. I think, you know, this is clearly an endorsement for you to the work that you've done. But I think particularly we haven't really learned through some really quality research that can paint an intimate portrait about, you know, who are the diverse donors within the African American community that make up our philanthropy and drives that philanthropy. And I'm thinking specifically to the different types of donors that you presented, the Cornerstone, Kinship, Sanctified, and Strategic donors. That really has influenced my thinking and how I am approaching this work, even more so in terms of, one, thinking about it in terms of drivers, but also looking and approaching African-American donors who have a story to tell and something that is driving their philanthropy, and just taking a very close look at that. And I think within that, we'll see some generational trends that might be observed, I think, just along the lines of those who may fall into the Cornerstone or the Kinship or the Sanctified. And then there's some who I would say, like myself, really has tried to look at their philanthropy and be very strategic about it in terms of wanting to invest in things that are probably not so much relief, but opportunities to really bring about change either in individual lives or in the community as a whole.
You know, you really bring forth some really good points. One of the things that we had hoped that our report would do would not just shed a light on Black philanthropy as in, okay, Black people give, but really provide an understanding of how and why we give. And that's why today's conversation is so exciting for me, because Mrs. Dixon, you have been an amazing model of what is Black philanthropy. And I would like to kind of ask from your opinion, you know, our report kind of hinted at it, like we give all these places, but, you know, where do we see change? So from your point of view, Mrs. Dixon, what do you see as the role of Black philanthropy to assist with positive change?
Well, I believe the role of Black philanthropy is to be ever mindful of the following. This is one of my pet ones. Of whom much is given, much is expected. Now, of course, we know that this is not referred to money alone, but it includes time and talent as well as treasure. And, Alan, you know, we know people in this community who are good at that, with time and talent. When I observe a need, it gives me the opportunity to make and often impact the greater good of the entire community. This is the role to which I believe every person should aspire.
And I agree. And Ethan, so when you know, she had mentioned that a lot of people give above talent and they volunteer and they kind of get involved. Well, how do you see the role of Black philanthropy increasing to assist in this positive change as well?
Well, you know, I think when, first of all, I think, you know, Mrs. Dixon, she exemplifies to me what is not only potential, but what actually is. And I think as I've gotten to know her over this past year here in Greensboro, it really is that conviction, and a conviction that is matched by what I'd say a commitment and an investment. Too often, I know in the world of which we work and operate, that oftentimes we get caught up in not even so much the amount, but I like the way Mrs. Dixon has approached her philanthropy and the fact that she's been strategic and that she understands that education has been so important to her life, but also she sees it as being really a difference maker in the lives of other people. And not just she's been strategic in the sense that she's made the connection of it being an intergenerational piece from pre-K all the way through college, and she's followed that as a strategy and how she's been able to give back to Bennett and I'm sure other in other areas, to me just really exemplifies to people the difference about this is how you can be very strategic.
You know, I have to say, Mrs. Dixon, the building and the work that you're doing really touched my heart, having a young child and really concerned about my child, even now, building a sense of community, being a part of a community. So having that intergenerational space is something that I've often talked about but never act on. So now you are giving me, I feel like you're putting fire to my feet to say, really think about this intergenerational piece. And I'm so excited about that piece of work. And I kind of wonder, where does this inspiration come from? You know, what is your earliest memory along your philanthropic journey? How did you come here to have that understanding?
Well, thank you, but I want to go back to the Intergenerational Center for just a minute. We have
sure.
children, yes, because they really start learning at, you know, at very early ages, and they like to get the children in there when they're by the time they're 3 years old. But it is called intergenerational because we want the senior citizens in the community to take advantage of our services too, by learning to use a computer, for doing their taxes, and as Aislinn has already said, and for being there for the young people. You'd be amazed at what it means to them to have the senior citizens come in from the community and read stories to them. It is absolutely wonderful, a beautiful sight to behold. And it is, yes, it is a good school. I have to brag a little bit. It is a five-star school too, and it has been ever since it began, even before my name was attached. So I'm thrilled to be a part of that, and thank you so much. And now, back to your question, what is my earliest memory of personal philanthropic journey? I think that was your question. Okay. My earliest memory is putting money in the collection plate at church. I grew up from a Christian home, and where attending church was just as natural as breathing. Now, please allow me to elaborate a bit. I married a serviceman, and we, as expected, traveled extensively. Upon returning home for vacation one time, a neighbor hugged me beautifully and warmly and said, I shall never forget you for making a dress for me so I could attend my son's graduation. Yes, sewing was a talent. But until this day, the memory of making that dress escapes me. It really does. But it shows that we give in different ways. We do not, and that was a talent, of course. And but we don't have to remember them all. Just meet a need. That's the basic thing. Mm-hmm. Okay.
That is great. I love that. And I think that's something we forget, because I think too often the money is the piece that's always emphasized.
Yes.
But not meeting the need.
Yes.
And I think that's one of the reasons I love that center, because that's how you build community. Children talking to older people, talking to grandparents, reading to them, having that interconnection that sometimes is missing from our community.
If you ever get to Greensboro, I'd love to show it to you.
Oh, I'm coming. I'm probably coming sooner than you think. Right,
okay.
Aiden?
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
Good.
Well, as we continue the conversation, Ms. Nix, this is something I would like to know, and I think this is just kind of for the audience. I think you can shed light on this. As you're making your decisions about where you want to give or how you want to give, who do you consult with, and how do you go about that?
Oh, that is a good question. Decisions begin. You've already heard a glimpse about my faith, I'm sure. But
mm-hmm.
now, decisions begin with a prayer. And they are followed by directions with financial advisors and a trusted nephew who gives sound advice. I firmly believe that we do need professionals in our lives, but we need to bring somebody younger on up too. It can be a nephew. It can be anyone. I just happen to have the nephew that is in the finance and is there to help. But so why shouldn't I bring him along? Let him see what things are this nation. But I often ask others to join me to give them the joy of giving, and with the prayer that also it will have a domino effect. As you know, the intergenerational, we just got through talking about the intergenerational center at Bennett is named for me. And I purchased a bus for the center a couple of years ago. And I asked family members, and my husband was the oldest of 10, so I have lots of family members here. I asked them to purchase booster seats for the bus. Now, each name, one of their names is embroidered on a seat. I want you to know they were overjoyed to be a part of the effort. So when I make decisions, and now I try to include someone else, because we need to bring others along and let them see what we are doing, and hope, as I say, that they will continue the work on their own, and let them know it doesn't have to be about money alone.
You know, Ethan, one of the things that makes me think about for you, you've done amazing work in bringing people along as well. Too often we see philanthropy as this singular act, this, you know, one person gives and we honor that person. But the work that you've done around giving circles was a lot like that, right? Can you talk a little bit about how you bring people along as well?
Yeah, I mean, first I got to admit I have to gather myself here because just hearing Mrs. Dixon talk, I mean, I get the privilege of hearing her once in a while. Every time I hear it, just it inspires me. And I'm so glad she has put up with me and been patient with me.
Oh, he's a delight. Don't think that.
for a year to get her to share these nuggets of wisdom that she has. And besides, what I want to, and I'll circle back around to why it's so important, around the work I've been doing, is that when I listen to Mrs. Dixon talk, it is what I say, it is cultural. Cultural in the sense of that's who we are is important. I think every community has their cultural traditions or things that make their culture. But when I look back and I see, as Ms. Dixon has said, that, you know, she wanted to make sure she brought someone along the way. And I look at the work that I've done is that I had an opportunity to become a professional in this work, and hopefully I become a trusted professional to advise, but more importantly, just to share the information and knowledge that's out here for how we can do our giving differently and do it strategically. I think Mrs. Dixon has kind of given the commercial for the work that we hope to talk about, you know, when we say being strategic with your philanthropy. You know, it isn't just also where you give, but that approach of how she brings someone along. She's referenced about being a professional, utilizing a professional advisor. She's also gone around by doing it collectively, by involving others. You know, that just epitomizes to me what we were trying to recapture. Well, not even recapture, but just bringing up to light what we had already done and matching it with what I'd say are 21st century tools to get access to. But Ms. Dixon is really stands out and say improves that, you know, the question that we've always been doing a given, and we've been doing it even if institutions maybe haven't approached us or we haven't used them. We've been resourceful enough and smart enough to find out a way to take care of our communities.
You know, Ethan, the thing that I love you said, and Mrs. Dixon as well, is this issue of culture. One of the things that NEBIP is grounded in is our culture. And even in our mission statement, or I would say when the vision of our work is to move the way that people see our culture, is that we are not a people of deficits, but a people of assets that can be leveraged for our future good. And I'm so happy that you brought that up, because I think the intergenerational center, Mrs. Dixon, is our culture. I mean, that is who we are. We're used to being with our grandparents and our children and having them together and learning from each other. And I just can't wait to see this space and experience it.
Thank you.
So, Ethan, when you talk about being inspired by this work, tell me some of the inspiration that you draw from this, and how does this help move your future work?
Well, I'll give my answer, and I hope Mrs. Dixon also can tell what it inspires her. But I'm going to tell a story, actually, Mrs. Dixon, when we first met, if that's okay. When I was new to the job here, new on board, Mrs. Dixon's name was one of the names that came up. We had a lovely lunch together. What I loved about it is that, you know, she was very clear and said, you know, I love Bennett College, and that's what I really like to support. And I said, well, Mrs. Dixon, that you continue doing what you're doing. I just thank you for the opportunity to sit down with me and talk with me. And as we talked, and I learned more about the different things that she was into, and we even had a mutual connection of North Dakota, but there was this lovely person who was what I'd say just had a boldness that I said, you know, I can't rest if she would be willing to trust me to tell her story. And lift it up, because it is so important for the work that Bethia, that you and I and others are trying to do in the field, to lift up our stories of giving that are, you know, that go beyond the traditional pieces of what we typically may just be doing in terms of relief. But lifting up Mrs. Dixon was important because she's also inspires me to show this is what civic engagement is. This is what's so important, and how she goes about doing it. She's very understated, and she was so understated. And this is the patience part that we recognized her this year. We have an award that we give out called the Game Changer Award. That we do in conjunction with our local minor league baseball team, the Grasshoppers. And I just felt, you know, since that first time I met her, I was so inspired. I was just saying, you know, there's some way, somehow, we have to recognize this civic leader and philanthropist in our community, because she inspires not just African-American, but all people. And I think it's just so important to tell those stories, because oftentimes we don't get to hear them or we don't know them. And I think Mrs. Dixon, we had a good time at the baseball game. It was well deserved. But she is a gem in our community that needs to be recognized because she inspires. Sorry, I get caught up and long-winded on it because I am inspired.
That's okay.
Well, Ethan, I'm going to hire you as my manager. My goodness, for heaven's sake. Well, Ethan knows I prefer to stay in the background. But I must say a word about my Game Changer Award. I have been privileged enough to have received many awards in my life. They are plaques and, you know, all kinds of things. But when I received the letter that I would be going to the ball game and we're going to the pitcher's mound to receive an award, I was ecstatic. And the award was this. It was a baseball bat with the signatures of the players on it. Is that special? I was just like a kid expecting Santa Claus. I was, okay, now what do I wear? What am I supposed to say? What do I do? I really was, but it was quite nice, and I shall never be able to thank them enough. It was an experience of a lifetime.
Oh, that's fantastic. That's fantastic.
And I will say, she was looking sharp, too.
Oh, I don't know about that. It was a hot night.
Oh, my goodness. So as you think about, and you're very fortunate to have your nephew, Michael, that helps you, but as you think about social change that's on everyone's mind these days, and I'm curious to know, what does that mean to you, this issue of social change?
What does social change mean to me? Okay. Let's see. I would like to say that social change means, well, let me give that a little thought here now. Social change is, of course, on the mind of everyone. As I told you before, excuse me, but I am getting ready to cough if I don't watch out. I'm trying
That's
to,
okay.
trying to
I'll
suppress
give
you.
A
okay.
Drink
okay.
water. Okay. It's quite all right.
Go ahead with the discussion a minute. As you can see,
okay.
I'm starting to get hoarse. If
no,
you go on
okay.
the discussion just a minute, let me get some water. Okay.
All right.
And while she's away, can I chime in? I think
yeah.
We talk about social change, and I think sometimes in the world we work in and live in, especially now, these definitions of social change, sometimes I think they get put in certain boxes that if you aren't a social media activist, being able to organize people, you know, that's just one form of social change. But when I look at someone like Mrs. Dixon, to me, her social change is marked by commitment and consistency.
Mm-hmm.
Because one of the things that she has been able to do and will be able to do that people often overlook as a form of social change is that she is given an opportunity to bring together intergenerational group to learn together, but also the fact that with early childhood education, exposing young people to opportunity to get an early education, that's important social change. I mean, if we go back to the days of when we weren't allowed to read, it was against the law. Look at what the ability and the gift to be able to be educated and read, what that spurred in terms of social change. And sometimes I think, you know, we can get too caught up in making sure we elevate the conversation about social change in terms of some of the activism and the organizing. But sometimes it's just having people like Mrs. Dixon who says, you know, the best thing I can do in terms of social change is try to change and make positive impact on the lives of entire generations of families by giving them opportunity to education on both ends. I mean, exposing young women to the opportunity to know what Bennett College is from the time they're 4 years old until they're college age and ready. I mean, that's some social form of social change to me.
You know, one of the things that I thought about is social change, and especially as you were saying, we get caught up in the highfalutin, so to speak, way of describing social change. She and her husband were the embodiment of social change. I think her husband was an electrical engineer who was in the Air Force for 23 years. Then he worked at NASA, a space shuttle program. And, I mean, that was like back in the day. So I just think whether it is her philanthropic giving, but also her life and her life with her husband and her children who were taken much too soon, they embody social change.
Mm-hmm.
And thank you, Ethan, for sharing that wonderful, wonderful article about her from NPR. and the life of her family and her husband and her children as well, because all those things create footprints for us to follow in, or footpaths for us to follow in as we move our lives forward too. So you two met when you came back to do this work, the work along with Kellogg, is that correct?
Yeah, when I was here in Greensboro, just fresh, she was one of the very first people who graciously accepted my call and invitation to have a conversation.
Wow. Was it the thing to join us again?
Yes. Goodness gracious, I don't know what's happening to me this morning. But, okay, I'm going back to, so you're asking about what is social change. I think social change is any significant change. A massive change maximizes, of course, resources. And because I said that, because I want to give you an example of a restaurant owner, and you might have read about him by now, because he had leftovers every evening after work. And he thought, I hate throwing this away. And he started a little campaign among other restaurant owners, and they took their food to homeless shelters to feed the people there. And I thought that is a massive change.
Mm-hmm.
Now, social change is changing minds of people in the community, especially those nonprofit organizations, just like I mentioned. Now, giving to charity is a one-time donation for a short-term cause, but giving to social change impacts the community at large for the long time, a greater good of us all. I'd like to think I invest in both, depending on the need. One of my passions is also providing meals and necessities for the shelter, but I make contributions giving to projects like building the YMCA. And I guess that wasn't in your report. My goodness, you do know a lot about me. Okay. But anyway, I just think that any significant change is a massive change. And we can all make small and short-term changes. But also, we don't have to be wealthy or anything else to make a massive change. Just like this restaurant owner, he just took what he had and gave it away. And made such an impact.
It did. And I don't know if you heard me say, I think your life and your life story with your husband and your children, that's a bit of social change as well. And we thank you for sharing that with us. But as you think of social change and social justice, particularly an agenda for the Black community, and I'll give this to either Mrs. Dixon, to you, or Ethan, to you. What should an agenda look like? And what are the things that we should be considering for a change?
You want to take that one, Ethan?
Well, you know, I'll defer to you if you want to go, but if you tell me to go ahead, I'll go forward.
I'm going to drink some water.
I think one of the things about our social justice agenda, what it looks like, for me, I've been struggling with this a little bit lately, because I think we can often get caught up in, like, what is the agenda? And what I realize is that it's probably more important to have room for the various agendas that are affecting us, but always come back to whatever the social justice agenda is. The most important question that I always put before myself and with others is, who's going to pay for it? Who's going to pay for it to make sure that it goes forward? And I think, you know, that's always a tricky question to ask in philanthropy, but also in certain circles. I think recently I've heard about how the Black Lives Matter movement is now receiving donations or funding in a way, which is all well and good. But one of the things I think is very important to remember is that you know, whoever controls the money or funds you can control or influence, divert your agenda. So that's why I always say it's important, and the work that we're trying to do about Black philanthropy is to really hammer in that whatever the agenda is, social agenda is, the most important question that needs to be always put before us is who's paying for it. And I think in a way Mrs. Dixon, you know, she exemplifies that, you know, there was an agenda to, that she saw to have young children educated. And she stepped up to the plate and became a community investor.
Wow. I like that title, community investor, because you are really investing in the path, right? With a greater rate of return than I think we can see in our individual portfolios or any place else. What else is there to invest in other than our children? And Mrs. Dixon, did you want to add to that?
Yes, I can, I believe. And forgive me for having to stop twice. I am very I think it's the allergies here.
I think it's the weather change. I'm drinking water as well.
You are doing, but at least you're not getting hoarse. Okay. Okay, we have, of course, the haves and the have-nots in every community and races. The haves always manage to get more, and the have-nots remain the same or they receive less. We also, and I liked your answer, Ethan. We wonder who's going to pay for it, because we have less privileges than others. And how many members in the Black community belong to country clubs? And that's because they can't afford it. Then we have to think about law enforcement. We have to think about human rights. I hope this is all making sense, because it just came together for me. And a white man can stand on a street corner with a gun and say, I have the right to bear arms. A Black man can stand on the same corner, holding the same gun, and he'll be killed.
You're right.
We have a social justice agenda that we must address, and I wish I knew where to start there. I wish I could start something there, but I guess I can't. But back to our company in Florida, my husband and I were partners in the company, and it was an education for both of us at all times. And I must tell you, I said that to say this, because I hope whoever is listening and has the opportunity to do something like this. We had the best employees in the world. They didn't want to leave us. They only left when their families were leaving or something of that nature. So when you think of social justice, please think of the human rights of everybody, and that does include your employees and your coworkers.
You know, you raise a really good point on how we can lead from our seats, because sometimes I think you're right. We think of social justice being this big other, like huge, way out there, without thinking about the small things. And I appreciate this, because even in philanthropy, we don't think about a small gesture of what do we pay people?
That's right.
How are we treating coworkers? Mm-hmm. How do we treat the very people we work with? Mm-hmm. And I want to, you know what? I think I'm going to quote you on that, because philanthropy should pay attention to that. Ethan, this is something we've talked about. Here it is. We're trying to solve these big issues without solving these issues at home.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So one of the things, last thing I've been thinking about, and then we're going to open the lines up for questions. We have a couple of people that are online to ask questions, and we're going to open it up. So here's my favorite question. So as you know, we're promoting Black philanthropy, which is about change. And if you had a magic wand and you could change one thing through philanthropy, and actually, Mrs. Dixon, you've changed about 10 already. But if you could change one more thing in the world through philanthropy, what would it be?
Now, that is a good question. And, you know, I think that would take up a whole program if you wanted to. When I read that, I read some things that I thought, okay, what is going to be asked of this today? And I wanted to be prepared. So I was thinking about the same thing. Okay, what would I change in this world? Here I go again. If I had this magic wand, I would open doors to children first, as I'm doing, but in a more magic setting. And when I say a more magic setting, I would like very much to involve parents in what they are doing morning, noon, and night. And this teaches philanthropy, believe it or not, to older people also. We learn by doing. As a business owner, one of the most remembered projects for us was an annual golf tournament. Now, the proceeds went to the National Kidney Foundation. And how can I change that? Speaking of the Kidney Foundation, I would like, I know this sounds rambling, but I'm going to tell you something that's very special because you mentioned it earlier. I started a program on organ, tissue, and bone marrow donation awareness. I would love to have the funds to take that further because we need research. We need to inspire more people to think about donations, and we also need the education of physicians to make organs that can replace the organs that have given up. What I would like to do would be have more funds to promote organ donations and to see that people have their lives extended for a very long period of time. I don't know whether the story that you read about me listed why I started that program or not, but it was a very personal reason.
Yeah,
we might not have time to go into that.
No, we have time. We do. And I think it's very special because there's nothing that like your children.
Well, yes. We had a daughter, and she died of an incurable kidney disease, and she also had a disease, purpura, as a part of a kind of leukemia. And so I was elected chair of a program with a very large organization, and I prayed so hard to do something that would make a change for us as an organization, but also to our community. And with, as living on the Space Coast and working on the Space Coast, naturally the launches came to mind, so we named the program Launching Linkages. And this, so we started the program in the links, as you've already noted, and it became a national signature program. It is now in 44 states and the Bahamas, and we just want to take it further, and I'd like for it to be more extensive. But that's why it started, because of my daughter's death and the desire to help the community in a very special way. And you know that prayer has been answered.
Thank you so much for sharing that. You know, we all believe in prayer.
Yes.
And I love the fact that you said, you know, when you make your decision, you start with prayer because it is a powerful way to start. And we just thank you so much for your work. And I agree with you. And Ethan, I'm going to ask you the same question because I agree with you about research. And one of the reasons that NEBIP is trying to sit in this space of really thinking about inform, reform, and transform, because we realized that there was very little research about us. There's a lot of research. Well, I should say there's a lot of research about us, but very little research for us about how medicines affect our bodies, how organ donors, that's another piece that's very important for us to learn more about, and also how our bodies are medically impacted by other procedures. So I agree with you wholeheartedly, and we will pay attention. And Ethan, for you?
There is no way I can follow up that.
No.
I just, as they say, can I take a fifth on this?
I think your magic wand is Mrs. Dixon.
Yes. I just bring the magic to you.
That was kind,
David. Good morning, Mrs. Dixon. And I thank you for bringing it to us, her to us. And Mrs. Dixon, this has been a tremendous conversation. We have a couple of people waiting online. And so for those of you that are listening to us, if you would like to call in with a question, our number is 929-477-2586. That's 929-477-2586. We have a couple of a few callers that are waiting. I will call out your last four digits, and I'm going to start with caller at 3780. Caller at 3780, please ask your question.
Hi, first I just like to thank Mrs. Dixon for Mrs. Dixon for coming up. Hello?
Hello? You're here. We can hear you.
I'd just like to thank Mrs. Dixon for all of the things that she has said. I thoroughly enjoyed the radio show, but my question is, in philanthropy, where in your life have you seen it underrepresented within a certain area, and what area is that? And also going forward, how would you suggest that we fix this particular issue based on the experiences you've had in life? And do you think social change will have an impact in the future?
Oh, I think that social change is going to have an impact on the future, but we have to make that impact. And you're saying how? I wish I knew all the answers for that. But I do believe that we need to join in our communities, boards, and committees more. You know, we will look at this board of commissions. We need more people on that. We need more people on the education commission. We need more on the city council. We need more involvement. And we can't do anything by sitting at home. I think we got to be involved and be in decision making programs and processes. Now, Ethan, you might want to expand on that because you are such a part of this committee.
Well, I think one thing to answer his question about about the philanthropy side, and this is one of the things I love about Ms. Dixon, is that in a way, yes, she is a philanthropist, but she's not connected to this professionalized world of philanthropy, which I think is good, because it makes us go out and recognize and find the Ms. Dixons and really see what they're already doing. I think it's the model that can be emulated. I mean, I think we can, I always say this as a donor. I mean, if you listen to her story about the different types of things she's given in, she's learned by doing. And I think sometimes if we want to change this field, we've got to venture out there and try it.
You know, one of the things that Mrs. Dixon, that you just brought up that I feel like we don't talk enough about is the issue of serving on boards.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And I really appreciate you bringing that up because that is a big part of philanthropy, because philanthropy supports a lot of policies,
mm-hmm.
a lot of decision making in our community. And, you can give maybe a $25,000 gift, but if the board is deciding that it will go in one direction versus another, or you can give a gift in education, but if you're not involved in the school committee board, your gift is going along with the decisions of others. I didn't even think about that until you just brought it up. I really appreciate you bringing that up. And I think that could be a whole show, and we should talk more about how we're getting involved in time and talent as well as treasure. So mm-hmm. thank you. Thank you so much. We have caller 2366. Caller 2366, if you please ask your question.
Yes, thank you. Like the previous caller, Ms. Dixon, I can't tell you how wonderful it has been to listen to you today. I hope to have you back on for another interview because I love listening to you. But anyway,
thank you.
I actually have several questions that I'd like to ask you, but I'll just pick one. And that is, I'm kind of curious, from reading the work that Ms. Carter and New England Blacks in Philanthropy have done, one of the issues they've highlighted is how Black people who want to give philanthropically have been disregarded and somewhat ignored by the kind of the professional philanthropy community that Ace just referred to. And I'm wondering if that was your experience too. You obviously have the capacity to give. You obviously are well informed and obviously have been involved in philanthropy before you made this amazingly generous gift. But I'm curious if you were on the radar screen for any of these formal philanthropy institutions, or did you kind of come out of nowhere and were you a surprise to them, if you know?
Well, I suppose that I did come out of nowhere, but I can tell you right now, I have been recognized. For someone who tries to stay in the background, it hasn't worked. I get more free publicity than the law allows. And I sometimes I don't know where it comes from, but I have learned to say, because someone said it to me, Joyce, if you give, others will give. And that's where I leave it. And that's when I step back and I say, okay, if I can be a role model in that way, and if I can help others, then I will take it. But no, I have not been ignored in any way, shape, form, or fashion. So I wouldn't be able to address that.
Mm-hmm. So, Ethan, how do you take that question? You know, in our report, many people, they were younger people, felt like they weren't included, and they weren't in especially mainstream white philanthropy. They look for the same few people all the time, and then sometimes say, oh, my God, I don't know. Do you know anyone? It's kind of for board members and or philanthropic giving. What are you seeing from the funds, from your lens, from not particularly your community foundation, but community foundations or foundations in general?
Right. Well, I'd like to – it's okay to put our community foundation in this category too, because it is a point of emphasis that we recognize we want to get better at and reflect our community on the donor side. That's why I'm essentially here. And so I look at, you know, when I bring Mrs. Dixon up, like I said, we met early on. And Mrs. Dixon, I look at it like this in terms of sometimes you just have unique individuals who are outliers. She was determined and she was just going to be resourceful and find out and do things the way that she wanted. You know, that's just what I'd say. That's just God-given, inspired, and talent. And she had the desire, so she figured out a way. And so a lot of times, even as I'm starting to shape the work and what I'm framing it as, is that we've got to cover a knowledge gap. A knowledge gap is on both sides. Knowledge gap in terms of sometimes people don't even know what the Community Foundation is, never knew about it. Did not know that they could do it. But more importantly, if people don't see themselves in the institutions or ability to do this, we won't make that connection. And so I use, like Mrs. Dixon said, as a model of, you know, our philosophy is that if you do it through us or with us, it doesn't matter. We just want people to be giving. And I just think what she represents to me is just a kind of, yes, that's that asset part, that we've been doing it. And sometimes, frankly, we've been doing it without the institutions. And sometimes I think that's just generationally. She comes from a generation where the expectation, I think, is, yeah, for us, by us, to do it, if that makes sense.
I agree, and I thank you for that. I think we have one more caller, I'm not sure, at 3700, caller at 3700. If you have a question, you are live, please ask your question. Hello? Well, if not, I have another question. So, as Mrs. Dixon, as you see the work that you're doing going forward, 10 years, 15, 25 years from now, how do you see your center, and where do you hope that it will be in the future, the intergenerational center?
Okay, I would like to see the center grow. I would very much like to see it grow. And, of course, we have to keep up with the times of the education for the young people. But I have something else in mind I want to put
my
sights on. I would like to be involved in building a veterans village. Now that turns you that's a lot wrong with
Wow.
We noticed that some of the people who are involved in all of these mass killings and all of these have been to the military and they have come back, and I just don't think they have anybody to talk to or to relate to. And I think if we had a dormitory for these homeless people where they could go and communicate, and we could have, and as I say, a village, because you know I would want a rec center and a church there, swimming pool, the whole nine yards, and let them talk it out and let them invite their families in, those who are not homeless, invite their families in to talk, but have a place to stay for a short period of time or a long period of time, whatever they need it, to get their lives back in order. Because the reason I say this, I cannot imagine seeing a friend of mine killed. I really cannot. And I have read where I held my friend as he passed, or I saw this, or I killed someone. Those are the nightmares and the problems that I don't think these people who come back get rid of, and they just expound on them. And so I would love to be involved in a village. This is not the first time. The first time I investigated this, I was told that I could not promote something for just homeless veterans. It would have to be the homeless. But things have changed now. And so now I'm back on the Veterans Village.
You know, that's a very good point. And I know we're wrapping up, but I do want to put this out. I think there's research that has come out to talk about the issues of veterans. And these are people that have given so much for us, for our freedom, for our country, that when they come back, it's almost like we don't provide a community for them. So
no, we don't.
And we can do better. We can do much better.
And Bethiah, can I touch on something? Since
sure.
Ms. Dixon brought it up. This vision that she has, I think, is so important. I think about one time Lynetta Gilbert put a question to us and always said, you know, as you're doing this work, ask yourself, is your vision big enough? And I think one of the things that Ms. Dixon also represents is, you know, having that vision, because that's usually what philanthropic visionaries do. You know, they realize, and once they get involved in their philanthropy, they may have the vision and they get it started. But putting that vision out there to where others can join in and make it come to being is so important part of why it's important to be on the, what I like to say, the supply side of philanthropy. Mrs. Dixon is casting this vision out that I think is going to come into being, and it's going to come into being because I think it's something that our community, Greensboro, will latch on to. And I think that's just something else that just speaks to who she is.
Well, listen, you talked about the community, and that's one thing that I had in mind. This is a perfect community for a facility and for something like this. Okay, because we are a college community, and we could have our students work there from every phase that you could think of in the education field.
You have raised amazing points, and we want to not only watch that or figure out how do we help that. And we want to stay not only informed in this work, but a part of your work. And especially as we move forward to build a Black virtual public square, really give this vision out to other people and really figure out how they can help. So we want to thank you so much, Mrs. Dixon, for joining us today. I have to say, this is like one of my favorite calls that I've ever done. So thank you so very much. And we're both drinking water through it.
For sure.
And thank you, Ethan, so much for making this possible. And to all of our listeners and callers, thank you so much. And be sure to check out our website at nebip.org to learn more about this work and our work as well. Thank you for being such a wonderful audience. And please be sure to join us for our last call next week. Same channel, same time. Thank you from Giving Black Radio. Have a great day.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.